Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey cuz, Roy here. So about your car?
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
Hello, and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast. I am your host, The Monster. Yes, I know, I'm delayed again, but nonetheless, here I am. And there you are. And together we are, I don't know, you're a listener and I'm a podcaster, whatever. So, we have a couple of quick tidbit notes to talk about, as well as our big three topics, which I'll get to in a moment. So, let's start off with the big news. Again, this is from last week. Danny Elfman is going to be scoring the Justice League movie, which gets me very, very excited in all the wrong ways. Only because this is the master that I have grown to appreciate what he does. He has done Edward Scissorhands, he's done Dick Tracy, of course he did Batman and Batman Returns, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. I mean, this is the guy, and Spider-Man, this is the guy that I want in my corner. Problem what Marvel has is that there are a couple of not strong themes per se, but something that is not as iconic or recognizable as his music. And I can know exactly who's the composer based on a couple of previous notes that they played in a movie that was done 20 years ago. Marvel doesn't have something that's iconic that you remember who that hero is about. Batman is very distinct. Spider-Man is very distinct. So I'm glad to hear finally this is who we're getting to do Justice League. Because in all honesty, as much as I love the Avengers, except for this one 360 moment in which all the heroes collected and you hear that one theme, that's it. I couldn't remember the rest of the score from that point on. So that's a very good positive sign about the way things are going with Justice League. The other thing, if you have Netflix like I do, in July we're going to get Rogue One, so I'm very excited about that. Although, honestly, I have a copy that Mr. Gene lent me, and I have yet to even open it, because I just have been just way too busy. So, very happy about that. And the other thing, too, is that, because I work in a library, I get all my stuff for free to check out. But I checked out The Blair Witch. So, if you remember, I think 2 weeks ago or so, I talked about Adam Wingard, who directed the reboot or the remake of Blair Witch. So I finally got that checked out. But come August 25th, he's doing the live-action version of Death Note, which is the anime slash manga. So I'm kind of interested to see how that all plays out. So we'll see what happens in the next coming months or so. All right, so moving on to the big three topics. Of course, as everyone knows, the directors for the Han Solo movie, they got fired. So I'll be talking about that. And there's talk about a Fantastic Four movie. Really, it's more like a Fantastic 2, maybe 2.5, maybe 3 if you put them together, and I'll explain that in a moment. And last thing, I'm going to be talking about the Joss Whedon. See, I said it right. Joss Whedon. Aha. The Wonder Woman script that he wrote back in 2006, or at least it was around that time period. So that was also released. So there's issues with that, too. So, all right, going back to the Han Solo thing. So, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, basically, they're the guys that has done the Lego movie, the 21 Jump Street. They did Last Man on Earth. I think directed the pilot. And I think they also produced the other time travel movie, not movie, the TV series on Fox, which I like. And it's a really good goofy comedy, but I'm forgetting on it. And, of course, it was canceled, but nonetheless. Oh, and they were the guys that were going to do the Flash movie, the solo with Ezra Miller. But they left that project to do Han Solo. So, hey, they got clout. They're doing a Star Wars movie. They're doing a Han Solo solo movie. What could possibly go wrong? Well, apparently lots went wrong. One of the things is that, and my wife kind of pointed out to me, and yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards her argument, is that before we had The Force Awakens, there was nothing except for the books. And we had the TV series, the animated series. We didn't have much of anything. But now, we're getting Star Wars every year. Every year we're getting a movie. And with that, and this is kind of similar to what my problem lies, is that I was trying to do a podcast every week, and sometimes two or three per week, is that I had things that came along and kind of stopped my progress. So in this case, the progress that stopped in the Han Solo movie was that the creative differences, quote-unquote, which is like a term that you always hear about why people leave projects, but in this case, actually is legit that it is due to creative differences. The way that Lord and Miller work together is that they're more improvisational, whereas Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote the script with his son, didn't want the words to be changed. So you have that issue. And, of course, Kathleen Kennedy is going to be siding with Lawrence Kasdan. Plus, she's in charge of all this. So it just seems to be that if all you're doing is, here's the script, shoot it as I wrote it, what creative freedoms would those directors have? Kind of like with the problems that Marvel had. If you remember, Patty Jenkins, who did Wonder Woman, was on Thor 2 and had problems. But the difference here is that this happened in pre-production, whereas this Han Solo movie happened almost three-quarters of the way through. So that in itself is a very problematic situation. It's not so much like what happened with Rogue One, in which you had to do a fair amount of reshoots to cover up or to redo the story. Here, you're not even done with the damn story, let alone whatever reshoots you have to do, and then try to get this product out ready for next summer. This is where I'm seeing that maybe having Star Wars every year is not such a good idea. Rather, let's have the product ready when it's ready. Which is, I'm trying to do that myself, is to make sure that if I'm getting to do this podcast, I'm giving you at least the best I can with the podcast, and not to literally phone it home. Although, I am using my iPhone to record myself because I forgot my equipment. But nonetheless, you get the point. So on one point, you have to understand this is a huge franchise for Disney. They paid buku money for this franchise. And yes, The Force Awakens pretty much was an investment that paid off big time. And we're getting The Last Jedi coming out. So for right now, we're okay. It's not the end of the world that we're having this kind of problem. It just seems really weird that we're having this kind of problem. Because again, why hire people that have a certain style, that gave you good product, but when it comes to the way they do things versus the way you do things, comes into conflict? And of course, something like this would drive my wife nuts about if I'm going a certain way that she doesn't want, but if the destination is the exact same place, however way I get there, i.e. less than 12 parsecs, I'm going to take my own way to get there. And it drives her nuts because she goes a different way. But I'm like, we're going to the exact same destination. So however you drive, I don't care. So it should not be an issue with me and however I drive. So it comes to be, again, why would you hire these guys if you're not going to allow them to do what they do? And basically what they want is that they're free-flowing. They'll come up with ideas on the spot. So again, Lawrence and his son, who did the script, put in a lot of work to get the words right, to get the character right. You know, this guy wrote Han Solo back in the days. So, and I'm not saying that this is like a George Lucas script that, you know, it needs improvement. It doesn't. It's rare that we come up with that problem. And it's not as if we have a problem with a scene like in Empire Strikes Back, in which Han Solo and Princess Leia had that one moment before he was frozen in carbonite. And they had a scene in which they kind of confess their love for each other or something to that effect. But it just didn't click until that one moment that Ford said, you know, let me keep it this kind of length, in which you got the I love you from her and him saying, I know. And that's it. So that's the kind of creative differences that I'm like, that's fine. If that's the way it works better, fine. But it's not a slap to the face of Lawrence Kasdan, but basically he wrote the damn script, and basically Lauren and Mill are basically throwing it out and just coming up with whatever. The other side of all that, putting that aside, now they're bringing in an acting coach for the lead who's playing Han Solo. That is problematic because, again, you got the people to start making this movie, who also didn't then cast the people who are going to help make this movie, and now you're having a problem with the cast in this movie, in addition to the directors. So, oh man, is this not a good thing? So, putting that all aside, I was going to record this podcast and talk about, well, who should be the people that are going to be replacing Lauren and Miller. And Slash Films did a really cool article that I wanted to talk about. But the problem, Mike, is that, never mind that, we got a director. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But they picked out 13 directors that they would think that, you know, really good candidates. So here are my responses. And again, this is the article from 1 through 13. So my answers are, number 1, yes. Number 2, no. Number 3, yes. Number 4, hell no. Number 5, maybe. Number 6, yes. Number 7, not at this time. Number 8, no. Number 9, not at this time. Number 10, no opinion. Number 11, yes. Number 12, fuck no, but it's a safer alternative. Sorry for dropping the little F-bomb there. And number 13, well, you had your chance. So, now that you hear all my answers, I'm not going to talk about who the directors are, but the link to that article will be in the show notes. So then you can click on it and look at back at what I said about my responses. So let's put that aside. So now we got Ron Howard, who is now officially taking over the productions. And from the articles that I've been reading, is that when this was announced, the crew had cheered for this to happen. And were very happy about it. So that is kind of interesting about how things were on the set. And putting that aside, Ron Howard is a very capable director. There's not an issue about what he can do and what, how he can deliver. My thing, and this has always been since almost day one, Willow is the movie, I think it was one of his first movies in which he directed this with George Lucas, and he came up with this idea. And the trailer I remember being fantastic, but it failed to deliver anything remotely fun. He has done great drama with great characters in non-sci-fi slash fantasy settings. That's my only concern, is that this is going to be another Willow. And I know it's not going to be another Willow. And he has done good stuff since then. But again, that's the back of my mind about Ron Howard. And the last couple movies have not all been that great either. But nonetheless, I don't think this is going to be much of an issue with Ron Howard, as if this movie should fail, it's not so much a blame on him. He came in to clean up. So we'll see whatever happens with the fallout of this movie, if this is going to be done on time, is it going to be released next year on schedule, because now they moved the date to May. So May will be the new official date for the movies, as opposed to December, which I kind of really liked. I really like December movies. But in any case, we'll see whatever happens from this point on. But honestly, this is kind of worrisome, because something like this has never happened before. And I'm sure, hopefully, this won't happen again, but you never know. The fact that this, again, happened so late into production is a great deal of concern. So hopefully, this is something that they're able to easily recover, just like they did with Rogue One. And look how well Rogue One worked. So that's all I'm going to say about that. All right, so moving on. We are getting possibly another Fantastic Four movie, but a more kid-centric Fantastic Four movie. Kind of like a la The Incredibles. But from what I've been hearing and reading again, this is, I guess we're going to get the Human Torch, the Thing, and the kids of Reed Richards and Sue Storm. So that's fun. Not for me. So the writer for this is Seth Graham Smith, who has done The Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, which I actually enjoyed. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which fantastic. I really enjoyed that one. And he has done some work on the Josh Trank version of the Fantastic Four with some help on the script. So that looks like that's happening. And this is something, again, I'm behind on my Versus and my rewatch, but my Versus was going to be the Fantastic Four with Roger Corman version that was never released, versus Tim Story's version of the Fantastic Four, versus a Josh Trank's version of Fantastic Four. And if you've never seen the Roger Corman version, you can find it on YouTube, and there it is. And it's decent enough to watch, even though it's low budget, made for about $1 million or thereabouts. And there was a documentary on Amazon Prime called Doomed, the behind the scenes of the Fantastic Four movie. And that is a very fascinating tale about what had happened to that movie and why it was never released. So that was going to be a big thing that I was going to do, I think, next month. But again, I'm behind on everything else. But nonetheless, when I hear this, and go back to the first movie as to why it was never released, it basically comes down to holding the rights to the movie. In order for Fox to hold on to the rights to this franchise, they have to make a movie in order to keep the rights. Otherwise, it goes back to Marvel. Marvel, I think, can definitely benefit from all this, but again, they've ended the series in the comic book form, I believe, and so there's no market right now that's going to be supporting them. Now, and I'll talk about that in the Versus podcast about the Fantastic Four, but I think the idea of doing this kid-friendly version of a franchise is what I talked about with the Batman Forever movie. How Batman Returns was much darker and the parents wanted a new kid-friendlier Batman. Hence why we got that Batman Forever. I don't want to see a Fantastic Four Forever equivalent. I mean, we have Spy Kids, for a good example, which was very enjoyable. Do something like that, or, hey, there's The Incredibles 2 that's coming out soon, so forget that. Give us an actual Fantastic Four movie that actually works based on the Fantastic Four. Tell us a good, compelling story. To kind of leapfrog a franchise this way, that's like, you know, I'm going to talk about the Justice League, but the kids of the Justice League, you know, and do a movie about them. Unless you want to do the, what's that series? Oh my God, what is that series? Unless you want to do something like Young Justice. Well, hey, that works perfectly well too. But we're not talking about Young Justice. We're just talking about core characters that are not going to be in the core characters. Remember the animated series that came out back in the 80s, the Fantastic Four? There was Mr. Fantastic, there was Sue Richards, there was a Thing, and then there was Herbie. What the hell is Herbie? He's a robot. He didn't get changed whatsoever, but they wanted to make this kid-friendly because they didn't want kids seeing the human torch thinking, oh, I'm going to set myself on fire so now I can fly. Great. Or you had the spin-off, or not spin-off, but a separate teenage version of the Thing and his Thing rings, so when he slams it together, he changes into the Thing. So all those rocks come flying in and he transforms into the Thing. So that was also annoying. But there was a cartoon that came out, I think, back in the 90s that was fantastically produced, or even the last maybe 10 years. It was done very well. That's what I would like to see. Give me a live version of that version of that series. I would love to see that on the big screen. But they have not been able to get that right. So the hell to this new movie, or this idea of this new movie, thinking that, hey, this could work. We'll gather that market and make it work for all comic book fans. No, it's not going to work for all comic book fans. And in fact, the kid-friendly version of this, those kids will not know anything about who the hell these people are. So what is the point then, if you're not going to establish that universe with the characters that started that universe? Give me a Marvel zombie universe. If you want to put kids in there, fine, I'll watch that. I love seeing kids being eaten up by zombies. But this, it's a slap in the face to comic book fans that truly can appreciate that genre. So think about not changing the game, but, you know, make the game work. It can work. I just think this is the wrong approach. All right, so here I am, recording the last part of this podcast. And unfortunately, I'm doing this as I'm driving home. So if we hear me get into a car accident, it's because of you who are listening to my damn podcast while I'm driving. But nonetheless, here we go. Hold on to your potatoes. We're going for a ride. All right, so as I mentioned, Wonder Woman was written by Joss Whedon, and this was going to be the movie that he was going to direct back in 2006. And I've read the screenplay. It took me a couple of days to get through it. Not because it was difficult, but it just didn't work a great deal for me. But before I even get to that point, there was a situation which I met George Perez at a convention. This was, I think, up in Orlando. It was MegaCon. So around the exact same time period, I got to meet George Perez. And I had him sign a Wonder Woman picture. And I wanted to ask him a question. This was before I even started my podcast. And I wanted to ask a podcast question for him. Was, with this new movie possibly coming out, if you were writing this, how would you set Wonder Woman? In the past or in present day? And I mentioned about the whole Joss Whedon movie coming up. And he really, right off the bat, dismissed me. He's like, I don't follow that guy. And I'm like, but that's not what my question was. I'm saying that if you were doing this movie and you were writing it, where would you set it? So he gave me his answer, and I vaguely remember what it was, except that, you know, both had an appeal. You could do it in the past with the war, or you can do it in present day. It didn't seem to be a clear message or a clear direction that he would take. And considering how well he does the art and the stories that he worked on, you know, I was hoping for something a little bit more. But nonetheless, I thought he was pretty much a dick to me. So I wasn't really crazy about him. So whatever the case is. So lo and behold, Joss is no longer on the movie. He walks off, and nothing much about the screenplay is heard from. They did hire two new writers to come in and do their own Wonder Woman story, and that also never really took off. So for almost, what, 7+ years, we haven't heard anything about what that screenplay was all about. Now, of course, you know, the movie that Joss worked on after Wonder Woman was The Avengers, an amazing movie. An amazing team superhero movie, to be more specific. So, is there a reason why this screenplay, this movie, could not have been produced? Well, after reading this, I can see why this was not going to be made. We, fans of Joss, love him dearly, but the story that was told, and if you get a chance, you can also Google it, you can find it yourself. But it is present day. There is Strife, who is going to be the main baddie in here. We do get an appearance of Ares towards the end. Bacchus is also makes an appearance. And, of course, we do get the mascara. And we also get an invisible plane. So now, having watched the Wonder Woman movie by Patty Jenkins, and now reading the screenplay, it's as if it's night and day. The story that we saw by Patty Jenkins got it right. Joss got it wrong. There was nothing in that story that I thought, oh, they're idiots for not making this movie. No, they were right for not making this movie. There are two moments in the screenplay that I had like kind of like a facepalm moment. One being more major than the other, and I'll talk about it in a quick second. All right, so this is the part that was killing me when I read the script. This is around page 70-something or 80-something, in between somewhere or thereabouts. As I was reading this part, this is what I was just like, oh, that's what they were talking about. Diana reaches the middle of the floor. She raises her arm and holds still, turns her palm in and brings her arm down with ritualistic rigidity. This could go very badly, ... Then she moves her leg back and turns, fluidly,
a curve rippling up her body as she folds into a dance that is sensual, ethereal, and wicked sexy. This is not a warrior march, though it remains idiosyncratic. It is neither out of place nor unnoticed on the crowded floor. Angle, Griffin, and Ben watch, enraptured. Ben, are you watching this? Griffin, big-eyed, it's like Christmas. It's like Christmas watching Wonder Woman dance. And she's doing this dance because of Bacchus, who comes to her moments after she finishes this dance, which I don't understand. The other moment that I was doing a facepalm is that there is an invisible jet in here, and towards the climax, Diana is lying on her stomach to operate the plane, so the effect is almost one of actual flying. I'm sorry, let me get this straight. This Wonder Woman invisible plane, she's hovering inside and you can see her, so it looks like she's flying. Is that what you're trying to do? Because that's, it doesn't make sense why you would operate a plane lying on your stomach as if to say you're looking like you're flying. So that, again, were my two facepalm moments that I just could do without. In a nutshell, this was a god-awful story. And it really was thankfully passed over. And I as much as I adore him and I love his writing, this is one of those moments like, you know, just like my podcast, they all can't be winners, and this is definitely one of them. Even when I looked at Buffy, the movie, after I watched the TV series, and I'm like, if I was given that movie as a selling point to make that series, I was like, no, that movie sucks. There's no way I'm going to make a TV series out of that. Thankfully, he knows his stuff. This is just one of them that I just thought, that's a no-brainer. He loves women. He loves strong women characters. And here, it's completely devoid of all that. There's no character arc. And not that say that men are not aggressive towards women and call them, you know, bitches or whatever. But a lot of that was in the script, and I wasn't really happy about that. And again, when if you listen to the Wonder Woman review that I did with Mr. Jean, that movie, the way it ended and how she talked about having love and that was her way of defeating the evil and being very sincere and having a mission and a purpose is very real. And there was nothing in that script that I felt that's Wonder Woman. I couldn't even imagine who would play her based on that screenplay. Now, with Steve Trevor, I saw Chris Pine, and the lines were okay, but meaningless. There, again, I never felt a connection to anyone. So, I really don't know where to go from here other than read it for yourself, judge it, pan it, can it, cram it, I don't care. But thank God we do have a Wonder Woman movie that not only works, but is still making box office history. So right now, it's the top-rated DCEU movie of all time. Of course, there's only been three, but still, three, but this is the fourth one. But still, what an accomplishment to have this be part of our legacy, to be a part of the fact that Wonder Woman has hit the big screen and in a big, big way. And again, that movie in some regards, is better than a lot of the Marvel movies as a whole. So, I can't talk enough about that. But I'm not going to talk enough about that script. But, man, it really sucked. So, I'm sorry. But there's nothing to make nice about this. This was just a god-awful story. So, one time the studio got it right. Ba-dum-bum. All right, so that basically ends my podcast for this week, or should I say for last week. But nonetheless, I'm glad you're listening to me and to my podcast. Don't forget, you can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. Follow me on the various social networks. So again, thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.